Not even dead letters could bring back the karma. Nikes and hood sweaters. That's what we living on. That's how we get it on.
Hello, you're listening to Gang Grey Live on CKUT 90.3 FM for February 14th, 2024. Today is Valentine's Day, a day that is traditionally associated with love, hearts, Cupid, chocolate, and relationships. However, Valentine's Day can evoke a sense of discomfort with many within the queer community. Many 2S LGBTQIA+ individuals perceive the day's emphasis on heterosexual love as the right kind of love, leaving them feeling overlooked or invisible amid the media's images and messages that don't resonate with their own experience of love and relationships. Negative connections to the day may stem from previous experiences with homophobia, lesbophobia, or transphobia. Examples may be of a gay man remembering about being bullied in school for not having a Valentine, or a trans woman may have faced rejection from a romantic partner unwilling to accept her gender identity. Certain individuals within the 2S LGBTQIA+ community might opt to steer clear of Valentine's Day entirely, while others may decide to commemorate it in their own way, emphasizing self-love or platonic affection. Queer seniors may especially feel uncomfortable with the day. They may have experienced the loss of a partner, feel isolated because they have no one to share it with, or remember tragic events in their lives like the AIDS epidemic. Some fun ways that queer people might celebrate Valentine's Day are to throw a 2S LGBTQIA+ themed Valentine's Day party or such event, such as speed dating or a dance. They may decide to go out in a group to an activity with other queer friends, such as a movie night, a game night, or a group trip to a local attraction. Creating a Galentine's or Palentine's tradition where you gather together with your closest friends and loved ones, whether they be romantic or platonic, and share what you love about each other. You can also use the day to volunteer with a queer community group to demonstrate love within the 2S LGBTQIA+ community. Some members of the queer communities may choose to avoid Valentine's Day altogether, while others may choose to celebrate it in their own way, with a focus on self-love or platonic love. However you decide to spend this day, remember, you are important, you are loved, and you deserve to enjoy this day however you choose to observe it. Later in this broadcast, we are going to hear some memories, thoughts, and gripes about Valentine's Day from some members of Gang Grey Montreal. But first, I would like to share some information about the Conseil Québécois Québécois LGBT's response to the storm that is sweeping Canada about restricting the rights of trans and non-binary children. Quebec is not immune to this wave of misinformation. The CAQ government, in reaction to what started in New Brunswick, Saskatchewan, and now Alberta, has created a Committee des Sages, literally translated to be a Committee of Wise Men, to study the issue and make recommendations as to how the government should proceed. The Conseil Québécois LGBT, whose mandate is to bridge together more than 70 organizations across Quebec to help ensure that the rights of sexual and gender diverse peoples are respected, has been following this committee from the start. Le Conseil Québécois LGBT has been monitoring the situation and has maintained lines of communication with its member organizations about how the committee was formed, who was named to the committee, and its mandate. They have now created a response and a plan to combat transphobia and ignorance in the larger community. On February 5th, they launched a campaign called We Will Not Be Quiet to organize our community and ask that you join the movement against transphobia. On February 18th, they will hold a public assembly for interested community groups and individuals to strategize and to broaden the coalition of queer people against all forms of discrimination against the gender and sexually diverse communities. They are planning to culminate these actions with a province-wide protest in Montreal on March 31st. If you are interested in learning more, please go to the website Against the Committee de Sage at www.pas-sages.info/en or Google CQ-LGBT for more info. Remember, if they come for one of us, eventually they will come for all of us. Help protect the rights we have fought for so long. Get involved. And now, I would like to introduce David, who will ask our members what they feel about Valentine's Day.
To CKUT, this is the Gay and Gray Show, and this week we're doing Valentine's and how it affects different parts of the community in different ways, and so we want to get different kind of arrangements, and you will hear through the course of the program different examples, and I hope you'll find informative, and I hope you'll find some of the comments that can be helpful to you in your own personal situation. Today we have a special guest. We begin with Gil, who scenario is that he was in a relationship with his partner who died, unfortunately, and so fits one of the examples that we have of couples together, couples that have been separated because of, and like in Gil's case, death, or single people that are dealing with coupledom and how they can survive that. So, Gil, why don't you give us a little example of how you and David enjoyed life together?
Well, we were together for 40 years. 39 of them were great. You work up, you know, relationship changes over time, obviously. We became friends before we became lovers. And I think that made a real difference for the longevity of the relationship. We also worked together. My partner was a recording engineer, and I would help him in the recordings. I knew more of the history of the music, and he was more of the technical side of the music. And Valentine's Day was always special for us. We always either went to a lovely restaurant together or saw, you know, a romantic movie together. So yeah, it was very nice. I have very good memories of Valentine's Day.
And this particular Valentine's Day, how are you celebrating or not?
I think we're going to have something with Gay and Gray. I think the Wednesday, like I said, is just either on Valentine's Day or just before it. So I'm looking forward to that. It's great to be with people, of course. It's sort of a new experience for me because I never had real experience dating or, you know, finding new people. Because I was only 20 when we got together, and 40 years is a long time, let me tell you.
How do you deal with all those memories in putting into the present-day concept when you're by yourself?
It sort of depends on the memory. There's certain pieces of music that I can't listen to because it had great meaning for the two of us, as well as certain movies and things like that, or even parts of movies which would suddenly elicit, you know, big emotions. But being with people is wonderful.
Do you think the gay community or the gay visage, generally speaking, has a particular focus on Valentine's Day?
I can't really answer that because I'm not aware of it.
You're not aware. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay.
You mentioned that there's some music that you no longer listen to because it brings back memories. There's any special music that you do listen to that you would recommend?
Well, I listen to Barbra Streisand at all times. I actually won my partner over to Barbra Streisand. He was a Joni Mitchell fan, which is great. I mean, I love her as well. But it took him time to come over to Barbra. And so many of her songs are love songs. And of course that, you know, elicits again great emotions. Well, Valentine's Day, either with a partner or without, just make the most of it and have a wonderful time.
Well, thank you for your comments and stories, and we'll be happy to share those on the show and hope people respond and it brings out some nice memories for everybody. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Next up, we have a friend of Gay & Gray. Campbell has been a world traveler and going to places from Iceland to Norway and other parts of the North. And he's been around for a while, so I'd like to get your comments on how the concept of Valentine's is reflected in the gay community, whether it's a good thing, a bad thing, people need support, or what do you think?
I've never had a Valentine's Day card from somebody that's gay. I used to get them when I was a teenager. When I was in school, I got them from lots of girls. They were wasting their time, really. And I think it's very overrated today. I think it's another thing like Halloween. They never used to celebrate Halloween in Iceland, but they do now, because it's a way of making money.
Do you have any particular favorite songs or stories or movies that help with this day?
Yeah, once I had A Secret Love by Doris Day. And I had lots of secret loves.
This day, some people feel pressure to respond that they have to be in a couple or they have to buy chocolate or different things that society sort of puts on pressure to respond in specific sort of ways. Are there anything that you respond to or look forward to on Valentine's?
What? It's never, just when I was in high school, it was the only time I really realized what Valentine's Day was. But, you know, all the girls used to write SWALK on the back of their cards. SWALK, sealed with a loving kiss.
Oh, no, I never had one of those.
You never had, well, just in case you didn't know what it was. And there was all kinds of letters, things, little things like that you could write. But it's never appealed to me. Even when I was married, and I was married twice, I think I gave them Valentine cards, but just because I felt I had to.
That's the concept. That's good. Society sort of expected you to do something.
That's right, so I did it.
Do you think there's expectations in the gay community that are more specific to Valentine's Day?
Well, if you're in love, you want to send a Valentine if you're really in love. But there's no point in me sending a Valentine to my lover the moment because he wouldn't know what it was. So it's just another sad day.
A sad day. That's the concept I like to hear. Have you any tools you would suggest to survive this day?
Stay in.
Cool.
Stay in.
Well, thank you for sharing your beliefs and thoughts.
Okay, thank you very much for interviewing me.
You're welcome. Today we have Bruce, who's president of Gay & Gray, who with Jean-Louis have been in relationship 22 years, going on 23. So how does Valentine's get reflected in your relationship? Anything special that you two do together?
Valentine's for us is like maybe a day to have chocolate. For us, the importance is our wedding or our meeting anniversary. That's the day that's more important to celebrate the couple. Really say Valentine's Day has no super significant meaning for us as a couple.
Do you think the gay community has a particular problem, or is there any particular thing in the community that reflects people's situations?
Well, I'm glad to see that some of the advertisement, we're seeing same-sex couples now, because Valentine's Day is pretty heteronormative. So I think there's a bit of celebration or recognition that same love is a good thing to celebrate. But also with all the messaging, even in the straight community, about coupling and being in love, and those are the really important things. That's really a difficult message to hear to people who aren't experiencing that at this point in time. It's kind of isolating. So I like the anti-Valentine movement, or it's called something else, I can't remember, but there's a name for February 15th, you know, celebrate being single. That's a good thing.
Do you feel the community has enough support systems to deal with people's responses? Couples that go out for dinner and so on are one thing, but people that are left behind, either the couple broke up because of whatever the reasons, or the person died, or the person, as you mentioned, single and have feel because of the day that they should be doing something, or I have to go get something because that's what we do on Valentine's. And that can be very depressive, difficult for somebody to respond. Do you think community has enough support systems to help the people deal with that?
It would be interesting to see what Interlink or InCall helplines are like on February 13, 14, 15th to see if there's a spike to do that, because I don't think there's enough resources that exist to deal with counseling and need, personal need services in our community at all. That's a huge void that needs to be built. But it'd be interesting to see who exists and what exists and how, what kind of response they're getting at this point in time.
So you mentioned chocolate. Is that dark or milk?
Depends who you're talking to. For me, it's either. For hubby, it's dark. But this one has a penchant for white chocolate. I love white chocolate. It's my favorite. Hurts the teeth, makes me feel really full, but I just love it.
White chocolate isn't chocolate.
Yes, it is.
No.
Laura Secord, it's in that little box.
I know it says that, but it ain't that.
With little nuts in it, that's the best.
That's good. I like dark chocolate myself. Okay. And nuts are especially welcome.
Well, John Lee doesn't like blueberries, so you know the ones that are dipped in dark chocolate. I love those things. So that's good, because then they're just for me. So.
Yeah, when I get on a plane, you can buy these blueberry-covered chocolates. Yeah. So I always look for that in the thing that they sell so I can survive.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, our next guest is Mark, who has a variety of backgrounds, and Valentine's is a particular irk for him at times. So give us your concept of how you would want to celebrate Valentine's.
Well, I'm single now, so I don't have to think about buying presents for a partner or people around me, but I see all the chocolate that's available, and I'm a chocolate-holic, so I do stock up on chocolate and eat it myself. Happy Valentine's Day, Mark.
There you go. That's the confidence in that I want to sort of share with individuals, that you can actually make this a day of comfort and celebration for yourself and not have to necessarily accept all the pressures that society are trying to throw upon you.
But I do buy that. I have to admit, I do buy Valentine's chocolates for my cousins and a few friends around me just for fun. And now they have some kind of, I don't want to call it erotic chocolate, but even Pharmaprix sells like a man chocolate, probably aimed more at women, but gay men love them.
Mm. I go to some of the candle shops and you can bring some of those stuff in. There are different ways to reflect what your individuals feel or don't, as the case may be. Do you feel that we here at Gay and Grey are doing enough to support each other and when we enter into these kinds of holidays?
Absolutely. I mean, take this year, for example. Valentine's Day happens to fall on a Wednesday, and Wednesday evening we get together as a large group, actually. We're usually about 20 people or more nowadays, which is fantastic. So this Wednesday, hopefully, it will also be a big group at the bar, and we'll be together, and then we'll go out to eat. So that's camaraderie. It's fun.
Yes, it is. And it breeds mutual comfort and support. So it's a benefit that it actually, Valentine's falls on one of the days when we have a gathering, because then people can fit in and not feel left out. And that's one of the things that Gay and Grey is strong in. It's giving mutual support to each other as best we can.
Oh, I feel that way too. Yeah, it's a very supportive group. Absolutely. Everybody's very friendly, easy to talk to, and we enjoy being together.
We do. Thank you very much for your thoughts.
You're very welcome. I remember when I was a kid, we had these flimsy little scrapbooks that you could buy in the store, and you actually had to cut out the valentines yourself with a pair of scissors, and then you would give it to fellow classmates, and that was it. There wasn't very much out on the market. Now I go into Dollarama, and my eyes just pop out of my head. I think, gee, I wish I was back in grade two, because they have an entire aisle, maybe even more in some of the larger Dollaramas, completely devoted to Valentine's Day, and you can buy just about anything. It's just so great. The kids nowadays have it easy. Lots of fun, you know.
They're not quite as inventive as we were when we were younger.
Perhaps. And I do remember my mother bought chocolates from Laura Secor, little chocolate heart lollipops that I think were 5 cents each at the time. And she bought that for the entire class. So that was wonderful. Oh, yeah.
That's a nice memory.
Yeah, it is. I always think about that.
Thank you for sharing.
You're very welcome.
Today we have Richard, who wore a special red tie to help celebrate Valentine's. So in our community, we have lots of different pressures to behave as couples or to behave a certain way as singles. How does Valentine's get reflected in your life?
Well, to me, Valentine's is not necessarily a romantic relationship. I mean, you can have friends or Valentine's or even total strangers sometimes just to, you know, to participate and not make it so exclusive. And I send Valentine's Day cards to my cousin and my aunt and my friends, too. I send Valentine's Day cards to my friend, and it doesn't mean I want to be romantically involved with them. When we were younger, I mean, that was so forbidden. You would never dream of saying or sending it. You know, nowadays you have Valentine's cards for gay couples, straight couples. Things have changed a lot, and it's a different ballgame. But no, to me, it's for everybody.
Do you find within the gay community there's much more acceptance of different possibilities, couples that are no longer together, or single people to feel they can participate in something like Valentine's and not be depressed about it?
I totally agree. I've been a widower for 6 years now. And every Valentine's Day, who am I going to think about, you know? But I sort of say, you know, there's nothing I can bring them back. And there's such wonderful memories. And I just treat myself to something special. And it still warms the heart to think about it, because we were so, so, so in love. And I don't know, some people will always be in your heart no matter what.
How many years were you together?
17.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And he was the total opposite of me. I mean, I never look for love. To me, if you look for it, you might make some big mistakes. Mm. I just met him totally by chance, and 17 years, and we were always together.
Now that you're part of Gay and Grey, do you find the group to be helpful in supporting you in some of these things?
Yes. Like I said, I'm not looking for anything, but it's nice companionship. And I feel like there's no pressure. And, you know, you go to whatever activities you want, and I really enjoy it because it lets you do what you want to do.
In being a survivor of a couple, what kind of, or any specific wonderful memories you want to share that can give comfort to other people as well?
It was what I would call intense. You know, they say passion passes after a few months. It never did with us. And to me, few, but not everybody experiences that. Mm. And so I experienced it, and after 10 or 11 years, he started to have dementia. But even till the day he died, he always knew who I was. We even worked together. A lot of people say, oh, how can you stand each other? You know, and
It wasn't a problem. We didn't try. And I mean, if you're lucky enough to have lived a wonderful love story, regardless of the ending or whatever, you're lucky, because a lot of people never do. And what I find sad is that so many people so desperately look for it. And I find it so sad when I hear somebody, oh, I'm looking for a boyfriend. What is somebody gonna love me? It doesn't work that way. At least, I'm not judging, but that's my point of view. To me, it's gonna happen. And you can't push it.
And that's part of the strength of Gay and Gray, is bringing people together and making new friends.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't come here with any expectations, and I figured if it's fun, I'll stay. If it's not, I'll leave.
Thanks very, very, very much for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Hi, we welcome Joe, who's a major volunteer with Gay and Gray and does things like the special walking group and new particular project of helping support some of our isolated people in homes. So, Joe, would you like to give us whether Valentine's has a particular visage in the community or a particular visage within Gay and Gray, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know if I can speak to the larger community, but for me, I think it's kind of an isolating thing, because if you're not partnered with someone, it's not really a meaningful date, except for the fact that it reinforces and reminds you of the fact that you are not with someone. And I guess, so yeah, I think that Valentine's Day is made more for people who are actually paired up with someone.
And how do you cope with when you're not paired up with somebody?
I think I'm used to it, because it's been so long. I've become accustomed to that lifestyle, and it's not really a matter of coping so much as enjoying the life that I have. And right now, and for a long time, it's been without a partner.
And are you doing anything special this Valentine's with anybody, with part of the group, or?
I'm not. I can't even remember what day it is, actually, Valentine's Day. I don't tend to put a lot of emphasis on it. Although sometimes when I have a crush on someone, I think about doing something really creepy and sending them an anonymous letter or something like that, but I have yet to do that. I would love to receive something like that, you know? I think that'd be so cool to think that you have an admirer out there, but I realize that it's kind of creepy, so maybe it's not the best idea.
Well, no, but it's a response from societal pressures that we're looking for something like that, where another kind of day we wouldn't have that kind of expectation of something should happen or could happen or might happen or being available to let it happen. It's sort of, there is a societal pressure to fit into something, and not everybody fits into something.
No, it's true. And if I did do that, it wouldn't be in a creepy way, just to be clear. But I think it would just be kind of like a fun exercise to just express, put it out there that I find someone extremely attractive.
Cool.
Yeah.
Any particular thoughts you would like to share?
I think I'm probably like the voice of doom and gloom on this radio show for Valentine's Day, so I may as well continue with that theme. I remember when I was a kid in grade school, they used to do this awful, awful practice of you give Valentine's Day cards to the kids in your class. And the popular kids got a crap ton of Valentine's cards, and the not popular kids would get none. And they would distribute them in front of the class to emphasize the fact that some kids are really popular and some kids are totally the opposite. So I think that has kind of left me with a little bit of a sour taste for Valentine's Day. But I look at it more of a personal thing for me. Like if I'm with someone, I really want to mark the occasion, because I think it's just a really fun occasion to do something special and show your affection to the person that you love. So I try to ignore the hype, because I think that's all it is a marketing tool. But for me, it's if I'm with someone, it's a really a personal expression that I like.
Well, thank you for sharing. We have Frederick, one of our newer members, who has joined us. And Frederick, perhaps you can tell us how Valentine's is reflected in your own life. If there's anything particular you want to share or any advice you give to people who might be feel isolated or left out of the process.
I have to say my first real experience with Valentine's Day was I was in school, grade 2, and I got a Valentine from a boy called Billy. And I took my Valentine's cards home to my mother, and she freaked out that Billy had sent me a Valentine's Day card. We'll avoid what date that is, but that was probably my first foreboding that I was probably a little different. I had good memories of Valentine's Day. I was lucky. I had my first boy-boy kiss at 14 in the park over here in NDG. My father and my mother had separated and we came here and I had to go to school just above the park on Girouard. And this kid in my class was a little older than me. Stopped me at one point in the park, pulled me against the tree, and I got my first kiss. So Valentine's Day is special. I just think it's how you look at it and how you want to remember it.
Any advice you would give to membership?
You're never too old.
That's a good comment. Thank you for mentioning that. Uh-huh. How long were you and your husband together?
We were in our 50th year when he died.
Wow.
It was hard. It really was. But I mean, you know, I know he wouldn't want me to be sitting there sobbing. But yeah, after 50 years, I've said to some of the people here, when you first get involved with someone, I don't think anyone ever wants to be, you're going to be married 50 years. You know? But 50 years went by really fast.
It does.
And you know, and you learn, you start out with you and him, and you become us, and the longer you're together, you become less, he becomes less, and us becomes the priority. At least that's how it was with us. And after he went, well, that was hard to find myself.
Yes, and that's the issue when you go from being two individuals to one couple, you're not only losing the person, you're also losing the couple. So it's grieving two ways.
Well, I was lucky. I was saying to you before, I complimented him and he complimented me. And I think that's why it lasted the 50 years. That you have to learn to honor a person and respect them and probably treat them like you'd like to be treated.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome, Bob. Bob is one of our long-standing volunteers, a member in the Gay and Grey. Has Valentine's played any particular role in your life that's positive or negative, or how do you think Valentine's is reflected in the gay community as a positive or negative thought?
Wow. I have no idea. I have very few memories of Valentine's Day. It was just something that occurred, and a heart-shaped chocolate would appear beside the cereal bowl at home when I was growing up. At school, I'm sure everybody has this memory, if you weren't one of the popular kids, when you had to make the damned envelope that hung on the side of your desk, and then everybody had to put Valentine's in them, and some people were forced to, by their parents usually, to give one to every kid in the class. But, of course, the popular kids had an overflowing envelope, and those who were less outgoing had one or two. Later in life, Valentine's Day happened to be the first date of three, and we went to see Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was a weird way to do it. But I think of Valentine's Day, and I have no idea other than Hallmark why it exists. St. Valentine wasn't hit by Cupid. He was a Roman martyr, doctor, and who was ordered to renounce his faith. He refused. He was beaten and beheaded. So where we get Cupid, I have absolutely no idea. And Cupid is Roman. His Greek equivalent is Eros. And I think there's a huge difference between cute little baby with arrow and Eros, even in Piccadilly Circus. So that's all I think of Valentine's Day is, this is weird.
Do you find Gangray creating supports for people on days like this so that they can feel some comfort and camaraderie within us?
I find it interesting that a lot of us have similar memories, and very few of us that I've talked to have fond memories of Valentine's Day. I think it's interesting to be able to share those feelings, and I don't know whether one makes any conclusions, but certainly one airs old feelings in discussion. Yeah, there wasn't any chocolate, though.
So chocolate is a theme.
Well, that's become a theme, right? It's the obnoxious baby with an arrow to shoot you in the butt.
Is that chocolate dark or milk?
For me, it has to be dark.
Ah.
Once upon a time, milk, and that was one of those things. The only good things was the after Valentine's Day sales, when it was all half price.
Well, this common theme today seems to be dark chocolate as opposed to milk chocolate. More people are into dark chocolate. I like dark chocolate myself, too.
Better for you.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thursday, February 15th at 7 p.m., Arc MTL and L'Afro Musée present St. Antoine Street Paradise, an evening with soul legend Skipper Dean. Join legendary Montreal soul and R&B singer Skipper Dean for a journey through the nightclubs around St. Antoine Street and downtown in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. This free event for Black History Month happens on Thursday, February 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Afro Musée, 533 Ontario Street East, Corner Barrie. Find out more about this new collaboration between ArcMTL and the Afro Musée on the website nightsofmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
Hey, this is Sasha Frere-Jones from Bowie. You're listening to 90.3 FM CKUT, Montreal.
Hi, you're listening in to an extra episode of Gay and Grey Montreal's series Queer Elders Sharing. In that series, we talk to Diane LaBelle. In this extra episode, Diane talks about the inextricable and intergenerational link between Canada's residential school system and Two-Spirit or queer Indigenous identity today. If you or someone you know needs support or wants to talk to someone for help, the number for the National Indian Residential School Crisis Line is 1-866-925-4419. That's 1-866-925-4419. Now, let's listen in to Diane. My next set of questions will be to you as a person, but also to you as an educator. And I also just wanted to give a warning to listeners or any kind of viewers that we're going to be speaking about a little bit about the residential school system. So I wanted to give a hotline number for people who might be hearing something and need some help, or just anyone in crisis and needs any kind of services. The National Indian Residential School Crisis Line, if you need to reach out for any kind of help, is at 1-866-925-4419. Again, that's 1-866-925-4419. And they can also point you to some other services as well. So I wanted to speak about, as we discuss on this podcast and in general in Quebec today, we can talk about some instances of homophobia or transphobia that people might have experienced throughout their lifetimes. And it's in a heteronormative world. And the heteronormative world is also a colonized one. What would you want people to know about the experiences of being Indigenous and queer, if we're going to use that word, from your perspective? Just talk a little bit about accepting within their own community, within themselves, and through the greater community.
The colonial plan required that we undo many of the belief systems within Indigenous communities. Anything that proved to be a strength or a binding of these nations was to be undone. And from their arrival here, well, towards the mid-1800s, the colonists saw the advantage of being able to own the lands that Indigenous people lived on. To them, they saw these lands as being underused. They wanted to use these lands to engage in massive agriculture. So it wasn't okay that they maintained a sustainable agricultural system within their communities, because, you see, they weren't mass-producing food. One of the essential values is that you only use what you need. There is no need to do more. You don't have to have all that surplus. But for the non-Indigenous, the Western view, all of that surplus could be used for profit. So for them, these lands were being underused. And in order to have access to them, they had to rid themselves of those who were inhabiting these lands. And so they engaged in a series of legislation that would whittle away at the base of the culture and break them down. And if they could break them down and assimilate Indigenous nations, they could engage them in the same colonial project, right? So that was the basis of the thought behind all of this. And it's important to really understand that it's a colonial project. It was thought out. It wasn't just haphazard. This was a plan. And the plan began with banning languages and banning ceremonies and trying to legally assimilate people by enforcing them to what we call enfranchisement, right? You're capable of, you're seen as a person of good moral character, and you speak more than one language, or you speak the colonial language, therefore you don't have to be indigenous anymore. You are now a Canadian citizen. And this was, again, imposed. It wasn't a choice. And so by that, they would remove people from these lands that they wanted them to occupy. They wanted to occupy. They displaced many people. They created the reservation system to move people away from the basis of the land, which is where the roots are, the anchor, right, for Indigenous people. And by banning all of those things, it had a certain amount of success on the part of the colonists, but not enough, and it still wasn't sufficient. We have to change the mindset. We have to change the way they think so that they believe what we want them to believe, or what we believe. I mean, I'm saying that they honestly believe these things were right for them, but they had the practice of imposing those thoughts and world's views on everybody else. And so they legislated the Indian Act, you know, and in that, on Section 2, the original Indian Act, it said a person is any other than an Indian, anybody else but an Indian. And with that statement, clearly explained how they saw Indigenous people. They were not humans. They were not people. And this is the image that was perpetuated generation after generation through the non-Indigenous education system, always not seeing Indigenous people as human, right? And it also gave them permission to do many things that they wanted to because they're not human. So it's not surprising that they would then send them all to residential schools far away from their communities. And the purpose behind that is that if they were prevented from going home, if the children did not have the influence of their families, which had the language, the culture, the traditions, then they have a better chance of teaching them the right language, the right sense of belief, the right, you know, and making them the way for them to engage, I guess, in the Canadian society. And so 139 residential schools were set up across Canada, 11 of which were here in Quebec. And these were run by religious orders that believed very strongly in the binary gender system and specific social roles for men and women. And anything outside of that was deemed wrong, and more than that, deemed a sin. And it's very dangerous when you combine that notion of sin, right, and behavior. It's not just your behavior that's wrong, because, hey, if your behavior is wrong, you can always change your behavior. But if you are the cause, you are the sin, you are the aberration, it's your whole being that doesn't belong, that is wrong. And that is more impactful. It's not something you can change. For individuals who went to residential school, we know this week we're going to be talking a great deal about residential school. We talk about the atrocities and the abuses that took place. The children that were that never came home, the bodies that were left, the system that was put into place to force people to believe something different. And one of those is that it is wrong to be attracted to the same gender. It's wrong to be different and not follow those roles. You're not the housewife, right? Or that you're not the dominant male who directs everything in the family. You know, you've heard of the expression, the rule of thumb?
Yeah.
All right. And a lot of people don't understand what that means, right? And that it's based in a law, a British law, that said that a man had the right to beat his wife and child with a stick so long as the stick was not any wider than the width of his thumb. So these were the ideas that were impressed upon Indigenous children from the age, initially it was from the age of 5 to 17, and then we see now that they would take children as young as 3 and bring them into the system. And these are your formative years. This is where you develop your ideas and thoughts and learn your values and your beliefs and your language and everything. And they then had this opportunity to mold these individuals, believing in new values. These are the values that come back to the community for 5 to 7 generations. In addition to that, we add the harm done in terms of sexual abuse. So, that are deemed same sex, right? And again, we add another dimension to it of how painful, physically painful it is, and how hurtful it is. So it's got to be a sin. And so we saw the rise of homophobia and transphobia in Indigenous communities. So as these generations return with these ideas, they begin to shun their own. Those who were differently gendered or had different sexual orientations, when they went to residential school, they have a whole, they have stories to tell. Yet they were excluded a lot from the experiences of people as we started to record these stories of those who went to residential school, because they face something totally different. So if you are born and you are let to be who you are and respected for who you are in a traditional context, when you arrive residential school and they say, okay, boys, girls, everything is divided into gender, and you don't know where to go, right? And so some will tell the story of, you know, maybe being in a female body but end up on the male side, and it's only when they're in the showers that they realize it, and then they get beaten for trying to do something wrong, or they did something wrong without understanding, you know, well, what is this? And then end up being put with the girls and not being fully accepted there as well, right, by the individuals who run the residential schools. And so it becomes very confounding for them, very difficult. So they've experienced all of these abuses and were put down for who they are. Sinful. They are wrong. And so when they return to the communities, they have to abide by whatever roles are being observed, either male or female, right? And so you hide yourself. I did a presentation in one community last week, and at the end, one of the things that this one nurse said was, you know, what I'm retaining from this is, I'm thinking now. I'm thinking about those individuals, those older individuals who ended up living and dying alone. And now I'm wondering, were they two-spirited? Did they isolate themselves because they didn't fit anywhere? You know, and it's a really sad thing because that's a reality. Many of the individuals no longer were able to be themselves in the community, and this is something that still happens, unfortunately. It's not safe to be even within your own family because of the interference of these thoughts and beliefs now. That it's hard to live the homophobia, transphobia, and so they leave the communities to try and find a safer place. And coming into urban areas only to face horrible racism and being put in another bind, right? So not being able to find solace there either. And I remember my partner saying, you know, she had to at one point decide whether or not she was going to live within the Indigenous community or outside the community, because you have more freedom to be yourself, gender and sexual orientation-wise, on the outside, but then would have to hide on the inside. But what you're doing is that you're giving up your culture. You're giving up your place. You're giving up your home, right? And so it's always at a cost. So a part of you has to shut down. Either you live in a community and shut down that true nature that you have, or you live outside the community and shut down your indigenous identity. So it's very difficult for in young people and even older people to live openly in their communities. In fact, you know, even the communities that say that they are open. And the question I would have to ask, and somebody asked me this when I said that, what would happen if two same-sex, same-gendered people walked hand-in-hand down the street in your community? And, you know, I don't think there's one community that would be okay with that, at least not from my experience. We say we're open, but there's a lot of healing that has to happen to understand where those thoughts and those beliefs came from and why they're there and why they're so strong at this point. It's more open in some communities, for sure, but until we normalize and bring it back, until we heal all of the wounds from residential school and the Indian Act and the Canadian colonist plan, it's going to be very, very different. Very, very difficult to be able to live openly in your community. Rates of suicide for individuals who are two-spirit, to use the word to make it a little easier, are four times higher than the high rates of suicide for Indigenous youth as they are. So we know that just by being Indigenous, you have a higher rate of suicide. Then add to that the difficulty of living within your own community, because again, it's like you don't belong, right? There's no place for you. There's no role. And if you don't have a purpose for life, right? And then you get to that non-person status, right? There's no reason for you to be here. And it's very, very sad. And it happens in the community where I'm living now, but it happens elsewhere. You hear of all these suicides or people who say, you're right, I don't have a place. I don't have a place, and I have no purpose. And if I have no purpose, why should I be here? So what was stripped is not not just their ability to live comfortably within their own families and communities, but their purpose. And that's what colonization has done. And that's an aspect when we talk about residential school that we need to look at. That is a very important aspect that is often neglected when we talk about residential school. The fact that they stripped those individuals of any purpose.
And made it about existence rather than behavior.
Yep. And then how do you navigate that world of religious belief, spiritual belief, right? And being who you are. You know, it's the constant conflict. Then there's the whole idea of coming out in an Indigenous community, right? One, that's difficult. And two, it's not really something that is Indigenous per se. You don't stand above or outside of the circle. You're all on the same level. So coming out has this idea of putting focus or emphasis on you. It's an individualistic thing. And so I'm very, very happy that we're now talking about the idea of coming in. We come into our identity. We come into the circle. We come into our family and resume our roles within the community. You know, Ganawake has a two-spirited grand chief. You know, wow. And I'm so happy that it wasn't, I mean, I know the media tried to make it a big thing. And the way that she approached it was wonderful, to just say, it's a non-issue. It's a non-issue. And that's the way it should be. Who I sleep with, none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That doesn't define me. What defines me in this role is my ability to lead my community, to listen to the members of my community, to be able to affect change for everybody. So approaching it from that perspective, you are part of, you are in rather than out.
Clem from White Cowbell, Oklahoma, and baby, don't you touch the dial because you got it locked on 90.3 FM CKUT.
Survive to 105.